3, 2, 1.
Here we go. Welcome to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, old school, traditional, and boring in the dust. And instead, we celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future. All related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Engagement here at BPD, and I will be your host today. And we are joined by a new recurring cast member, Chris Bevelo, Chief Transformation Officer here at BPD. Chris, welcome back to the show, and welcome to the new normal in 2025.
Great to be here for real this time. I've been back a couple times just as a guest, but going to be here most of the time. We won't say every time because we know better than that, but most of the time, which is fantastic. And we'll still have Des back and we'll still have Chris back. So Chris, what calling that is. But glad to be part of the official crew moving forward.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it. I think it's going to be great just to add to our ongoing cast of characters here. But you're here for two reasons. One is to announce officially, as we just did, that you'll be joining the show on a regular basis. And two, because we're here to talk about the awesome time that we had in early December at the Joe Public Retreat that happened in Charleston. So I know folks sometimes refer to that as your party, Chris's party. and it was a party, right? So I can't wait to recap that with you.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was last year. It was a whole year ago, feels like.
Oh my goodness.
It was exactly a month ago when we're recording this. But 2024 is last year already.
I think we've lived a life, a full life since then,
maybe. It feels like it.
I don't know.
It feels like it.
What have you done in the month that feels like a year?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I've done. I've defended the right to say Happy New Year after January 1st. Apparently, I missed a memo or a meeting. Today, we're recording this, we should say, on Monday the 6th. It's the first official day most people are back to work, at least at our company, though some people worked over the break. But apparently, there was a conversation that you're not allowed to say Happy New Year moving forward, or maybe after tomorrow, because there's a Larry David bit maybe that says you can't say after January 7th. But I feel like if today is the first day back and it's Monday the 6th, and I don't talk to somebody until Wednesday for the first time, I'm going to feel completely comfortable saying Happy New Year. I don't know how you feel about that.
Happy New Year, Chris.
Yeah, but what about Wednesday, the 8th? Are you going to feel awkward?
I don't know. I'm just going to let it blur into whatever feels right, whenever it feels right. Gut instinct here. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to set any official rules.
Well, I think since now I'm back, I can use this platform in whatever means I want. And I will call out our friend Ryan Coliani. If you don't know Ryan, he's our chief communications officer. And he was adamant that you have to stop after the 7th. And I said, well, what about, the rest of this week? And he's like, well, then, it could go all the way into like February, people saying it. I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen, Ryan. We just say it this week. It's okay. So I'm hereby granting my personal permission to anybody who feels comfortable saying Happy New Year, at least through Friday, if for the first time somebody. We'll see. We'll see if anybody has strong opinions otherwise. But I did other things over the holiday. What did you do over the holiday? I did more than that, but that's top of mind.
Well, before I move on to that, I'm going to set a reminder on June 2nd to say Happy New Year to Ryan Coliani. How about that?
Yes.
June 2nd.
June 2nd only.
Yeah. All right. What did I do over the holidays? I had a very chill holiday season. It was really nice. Got to spend some time with family. Santa brought me the flu, so I must have been really naughty last year, but I actually was happy about that gift. I got to just chill out and, sleep and doze off whenever I wanted. So thank you, Santa, for the flu. And that was my holiday season.
Boo Santa. Is he moving on from like coal in the stocking to flu?
Yes.
Oh, that's terrible.
How about you? What did you do?
Flu also hit my family, unfortunately. But I think Santa brought me a very cool gift, which is, I don't know if you guys remember Guitar Hero or Rock Band. Remember that? So I used to play Rock Band with my kids when they were growing up, and it was a blast. And then it kind of went, like, it went away, and we looked at buying it a few years ago, and it was like ridiculously expensive. But I looked again, and Santa found a Rock Band guitar and the game, which is ridiculously cheap. And so brought that back. Santa had that back for the holidays, and fun for the whole family. I got to say, everybody got right back into it. It was a great time. So there you go.
Well, I hope you were playing some Journey and, you know, all the songs that were hit at Rock Band parties back in the day.
Yeah, I think the biggest one was Four Play Long Time by Boston. Huge hit for the family. Yeah. And Creep, though Creep was not in the always a fun Rock Band song. It was not in the list this time. But anyway.
Well, that's awesome. That's great. I'm glad that you're bringing it back. So why don't we jump into our Joe Public Retreat overview, speaking of the December times. So I'll just give a little bit of an overview of what Joe Public Retreat is, and Chris, you can add into it because you've been doing it for quite some time. But the Joe Public Retreat, it's not a typical healthcare marketing conference. It's intentionally developed to be very, very different. It's really more of closed door, intimate, exclusive conversations specifically for health system CMOs. So a room of health system CMOs at the leading health systems across the nation to really dive into the most difficult issues that they're facing. And I think really talk honestly and openly about them. I love that sometimes there's even competitors in the room and people can really be comfortable sharing, because we say what happens at Joe Public Retreat stays at Joe Public Retreat, except we're going to share a little bit of it, but we will do that with blinded quotes and, you know, kind of covering some of the key topics. So, Chris, what would you add about Joe Public Retreat, you know, its origins and what it is today?
Yeah, I think you covered it well. And we keep hearing from people who have been repeatedly over the years, who have attended repeatedly, that it really is different. There's not anything else like it, which is really cool, right? It's not that the other conferences don't offer value. It's just something different. For CMOs and marketing leaders, we had even a broader audience this time. And we've been doing it for, I think this was a decade now. And I think we lost track. I think that was number eight, Joe Public number eight. We had a couple of years there with COVID where we tried really hard. We had one actually scheduled and we had to cancel it a month before in 2022. And COVID related. The last one we had done before the one in December was February 15th of 2020, which I love telling that story because the day we left San Diego, the headline in the whatever San Diego paper is, I don't know the name of it, was the first two confirmed cases of COVID in San Diego. And when we got back, like eight people from the agency were super ill, like sick for a week or 2 weeks. I even went and got tested for COVID, but you couldn't get a test back then. If you remember, you had to have traveled to China to get a test, which I had not done. So we might have been the first people among the first to get. Maybe we were a super spreader. We'll just leave it at that.
We were early adopters.
We were, let's call it that. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it's a great time. And it is, like you said, amazing how people roll up their sleeves and just get down to sharing what they really think and what they really feel. And so we get really incredible conversations and quotes that I'll, you know, always remember for years that people say and that are just so real. And most of them I can't share publicly. We'll just leave it at that. Very enlightening.
Well, that's what makes it a good time.
Yes.
And we have some quotes we'll share today. We won't share who said them or the context around it, but some really good quotes. It was my first time. So it was my first time to be there in person. And I thought it was an absolute blast. It was, dare I say, the most fun trip or business trip I had in all of 2024. It was really, really awesome just to, you know, hear the conversation, participate in the conversation, understand what's on the minds, what's on the forefronts of the CMO's minds today. And I think dig in and solve some issues too. So it was really great. I'll just give an overview of some of the sessions. And then I want you to, Chris, to kind of share with us a bit more about the theme. So this whole year's retreat was built around the theme, Rome is Burning, the Future of the CMO. And because of that theme, which I'll let you get into the details of what it is and what it means and where it came from. But because of that theme, really all the sessions were intentionally built around what does the future of the CMO role look like, given some major industry trends and headwinds that we've been seeing. And so we had Paul Keckley, who is a leading healthcare economist, talking about the future of healthcare economics. We had Dr. Marcus Collins, who is a, author, brand strategist, professor, really well-known author, talking about the future of brand building and lessons from outside healthcare, including culture. And we had Paul Raitzer, who we've had on this No Normal show before, the founder and CEO of the Marketing AI Institute, talking about AI. And of course, Chris Yu shared a lot of insights. Jason Brown, CEO of BPD, shared insights about ROI. And we also had Marianne Deslin, former CMO, and then Ryan Donahue from NRC, sharing along with you some strategic insights from a recent study. So that's my recap of the agenda. But Chris, do you want to tell us a little bit about that overarching theme and why the agenda was structured this way?
Yeah, I think we've covered Rome is burning and death before, so I won't go too far. But it's the idea that I think 2023, we started recognizing what we consider to be new threats to the CMO position at hospitals and health systems. That's a role that's always been kind of undervalued, under the gun. And we had seen some new pressures that were coming. And the idea that Rome is burning is, hey, the culmination of that kind of point of view was we had seen CMO positions being eliminated. I think when we first started talking about it in the summer of 2023, we had seen five or six. I had never seen CMO positions eliminated like that. They continue to be eliminated. But the theme has really evolved to be, look, whether or not there's an existential threat to a CMO role, meaning that's gone, or not, there are dramatic changes afoot. And those will definitely impact the role of the CMO and thereby the role of marketing at health systems moving forward. In some ways, potentially good, in some ways bad. But no matter how you look at it, anytime there's change at that level, there's opportunity. And so it was a deep dive into, okay, well, what are some of these threats and what do you do about them? And how do you actually take advantage of them if you can, build opportunity? It was all of that. And I think there wasn't really any question of, yes, there are existential changes potentially coming for CMO. I don't think anybody was like, no, it's all good. Nothing's happening. Nothing to see here. But there was incredible debates about what that means, incredible conversations and different points of view about how to deal with that. And I think that's what made the conversation overall so enlightening.
It did. So maybe we start with some of those threats. So I thought it was awesome that the whole retreat kicked off. We dove right into the deep end with Paul Keckley, healthcare economist, and he did not hold back. So he talked about the coming reckoning in healthcare from an economy standpoint. And just to share some of the stats that he shared, he said healthcare spending is projected to hit $4.8 trillion, moving up to 19.7% of the GDP in the near future, and we'll continue to see labor shortages, budget cuts, and AI disruption. And he said, I love this quote, the next 4 years are going to be brutal with policy changes. And he didn't shy away from digging into the policy and what's on the table there. He talked about financial constraints that health systems will face. And he said, if you're not ready, you'll fall behind. So I thought that was a really great session where those threats were all out on the table. And he even went as far as to, kind of suggest that the CMO role needs to change from just encouraging CEOs and the board to get butts in bed, but also encourage health systems to manage health and lives. So that alone is a pretty, big statement that we could probably dig into for an hour. but that was what set the stage. What were your reactions to those threats?
Well, Paul spoke to two of the things we kind of picked on in the original Rome is Burning thesis, which is one, where you see CMOs under the most pressure and where we see the positions cut are in those organizations that are struggling financially. And again, like you said, Paul did not hold back in saying that is not going to get better. It's only going to get worse, maybe demonstrably worse. And then the other thing, you know, that we saw as a threat to marketing in the CMO role was the idea that we are experiencing a historic crimping of care supply, meaning the labor force. At the same time, we're seeing a historic demand for healthcare with baby boomers coming through, aging in, which leaves you with 9-month waits and people shutting down units. And the question, well, if we can't even serve the people who are knocking on our door, why in the world would we invest in marketing? And so we dealt with those right away. And so I just think, it, you know, he has some good ideas. I think what was super interesting, and maybe we'll touch on this a little bit later, is Paul didn't mention once, that whole conversation didn't mention once the need to demonstrate ROI. Now, that came up later, but I think Paul was thinking even higher level. The idea of being voice of the market for the leadership and the board. And honestly, I'd never heard of the concept of voice of the market. We talk about voice of the consumer all the time and the importance of the marketing leader to lead, to be that. But there is something different about voice of the market. It includes the consumer, but it also includes all the other dynamics that would impact the health system. And I do agree that of all of the people in a health system, the marketer, maybe other than the chief strategy officer, is most oriented toward the outside, where everybody else is focused on the inside. And so who better than to be that voice? And I think that means a lot more than just voice of the consumer. So I loved that idea, and I loved the idea that if you can work it out in partnership with the CEO, that you can show up in front of the board. Because I think his point was boards in general are not equipped for the changes afoot in healthcare, and they need help there. And one of those ways to need help is seeing the trends and the dynamics that are out in the market that will impact them. So I love that.
I loved it too. And I thought it was a complete leapfrog of, you know, what we've been talking about in this industry and space for too many years, which is how do CMOs get a seat at the table? This was like a leapfrog way over that, right? This was like, okay, like come up to the 30,000 foot view, be the voice of what's happening, you know, in your competitive set and beyond from a business standpoint. What are the policy changes? Where is healthcare going? What are the expectations consumers have? Like, go so far, you know, he threw out the idea of a chief market officer, which we got into lots of discussions around title, and we can throw out some of the other titles that came up. But I thought it was a really great leapfrog to say, no, you're not just vying for a seat at the table with, you know, the C-suite. You're vying for a seat at the table with the board. And that I thought that was wonderful. Because I'm tired of having the typical seat at the table conversation.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are tired of that. And it is weird because we did have an extended conversation about title. And it really was like, is this just semantics or is this really meaningful? Is chief market officer really a meaningful difference? Well, it can be. I think in each case we talked about this, chief commercial officer was another thrown out. It can be if it's a meaningful change in how you show up, right? And we know that marketing, there was a lot of conversation about how marketing has become a dirty word. And that goes a little bit to Roma's burning. It's not as valued as much. Some of that's because of COVID. Some of that's because it's just maybe never will be valued as much as it is in other industries here. But if you're about the market, now all of a sudden you're talking about something much bigger that has a lot more dynamics to it. It allows you to talk to things beyond just what comes to mind when people think about marketing, especially those who don't have experience with it, which is brochures and videos and ads and all the things that are part of it, but not the most important part.
Yeah. So maybe we should talk about some of the other titles because folks might be wondering, you know, there were other titles thrown out. So, and they were ideas about the role, not about the title necessarily, right? To your point. So, you know, one other example was the chief engagement officer, which is thinking about patient engagement and how do you engage your communities. And then I know on the webinar that you hosted, Chris, with several of the attendees and CMOs, and marketing leaders, you all had a deep discussion on, you know, what does that mean? Like if we were to be the chief engagement officer or, you know, broaden the role of marketing, how might we own patient engagement, patient experience? And that was a recurring theme throughout the retreat.
Yeah, to me, that's a super interesting one. Kind of like, it's almost, if you really want to know what was meant by chief engagement officer, it was, to me, stakeholder engagement. So who drives engagement with primary stakeholders, which of course we always think of as consumers and patients when it comes to that role, but also the board, which we just talked about, also physicians, also the staff, which is wanting in terms of what it gets from HR oftentimes, organizations are. And I think there are some really powerful points made about that and the importance of it. The thing I struggle with it is, and I don't know that it's necessarily something that can't be overcome, it feels awfully squishy. You know, one of the nice things about a sales officer or a marketing officer is you can set goals and be held accountable, and you should want that. Chief engagement officer sounds like something you could get by without. Right. It just, even though I think it's very important and if it was done right, it could be one of the most viable roles. I don't know. I'm not sure that's the direction you'd want to go, but I do think it's super curious and interesting. And then, of course, the other one, Stephanie, was, well, we talked about chief consumer officer, although not that much, but the whole idea of who should own the experience was explosive. Is that a fair word to use?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect it to be so explosive, divisive. I think what kind of sparked it was when Ryan and I were talking about some preliminary results from the study that you mentioned. And most of the CMOs that we had talked to in the qualitative said that patient experience or the experience should be part of their role. But also we have heard in the interviews we did and from other people that really ownership is scattered across the organization, right? So you have somebody who owns patient experience, somebody who owns the digital experience / front door, somebody who owns the consumer experience, somebody who owns the internal experience, right? Somebody who owns the physician. That can be five different people or more. So it seemed, given how much the industry has struggled to actually build a cohesive experience, that there was an opportunity to consolidate that accountability, that having it spread across four or five different departments or people maybe wasn't working out. And I just remember throwing that out and having somebody literally like jump out of their seat and just shout, no, no, CMO should not own all of that. That's a terrible idea. But there was obviously other opinions where people said, actually, why wouldn't we? Which led to a different conversation we get to, but I don't know what else you took away from the experience part of it.
Well, yes. I mean, I think that the passion around it across all spectrums was really interesting because there are some health system CMOs that currently do own the patient experience, the consumer experience, and have made a lot of progress. And there are others that have tried and it hasn't worked. And there are others that are so far away. And so I think like that's part of the divisiveness of it. And then we got into a really great discussion on, you know, how far can and should you go? Because, you know, let's be real, we're not necessarily trying to, well, maybe in some cases, but in general, we're not trying to, you know, fix the scheduling problem. Although I know, you know, there are some ideas some we've had around it, right? So, yeah. So I think that it's an interesting discussion to say how far can and should you go. That was the takeaway I had. The other takeaway I had, just to sort of sum up the whole, you know, future of the CMO discussion tied to that, is I think the reason we had such a divisive conversation around that and passion around the title, it's not so much about the title, it's about the inflection point that CMOs are facing right now in this period of time. And it just feels like we're at this really interesting moment of time, given all the factors within Rome is burning, given where the, you know, healthcare economy is headed, given where AI is headed, all of that, that this moment in time is a key inflection point where you can say, you know, what, you know, how do I evolve my role?
Yeah. And I think what was super interesting was there was zero consensus on the answer to that question. And it came from a couple of places. One, we had a side convo about, not a side convo, it was just a spinoff of the experience convo about how some of the marketing leaders had just recently, like within the last month, absorbed comms. And they were kind of struggling with like, whoa, comms is a totally different beast. And there was obviously other people in there in the room that already had owned comms, right? And then also part of the study showed that we had listed like, I don't know, a dozen plus different disciplines that marketing could own. And in the responses from the CMOs that we had to that point, most of the CMOs said yes to most of the things that they would want to own them. Yet one of the pervasive threads of feedback was, we have too much on our plate. There's just too much to do all this. And I asked, I'm like, okay, magic wand time. What would you want to get rid of? Would you want to get rid of this? I just, again, like these are the moments you just don't forget. People are like, no, we don't want to get rid of that. Okay, well, how about this? No, we should keep that. Well, what about comps? Experience? It's like, well, wait a second. You can't on one hand complain about having too much and then on the other not be willing to give something up. Like you can't have it both ways. So that's what I mean by I don't think there was a clear point of view from the leaders in the room about no, you should focus on growth and growth only, or you should focus on experience and experience only, or you should try to own as much as possible. It was everywhere.
Yes. Yes.
Is that fair?
It is. Absolutely. And I think, I hope, you know, when we're sitting in that room at the end of this year or whenever Joe Plague Retreat would be, that there would be some more of a consensus or some learnings, because I think that's the interesting question to just determine is maybe the question, I think one person said, the question is not what do we give up, but the question is what do we add? Which is exciting. So I'm going to segue to how do you add something in a world where you've got way too much? So our other huge topic that created a ton of passion and buzz was around AI and marketing. And we had Paul Racer, who is the founder and CEO of the Marketing AI Institute, who, as I mentioned, we've had him on before. So if you didn't listen to that episode, go back and listen to that one. He really did a great job giving an overview and kind of a teaser before the Joe Public Retreat session. But his key headline was, first of all, marketers who use AI will replace those who don't. So big rally cry, big call to action. As a CMO, you need to be leading your team into the era of AI, which we are deeply in right now as an industry and society. And it's your job to make sure that your people, your teams, your C-suite, your board understand how AI can enable marketing. And the reason I'm trying to make that segue from the last topic is because I loved where he said, AI isn't here to do our jobs. It's here to help us do what we never had time to do before. So he gave some really interesting and specific use cases of, imagine, you know, all those things that your marketing department is doing on a regular basis. And he gave the example of like podcasts, right? Health systems have sometimes many podcasts. And imagine how he broke down specific tasks that you could use to enable those podcasts. Or maybe it's web content. Like those things take up so much time and so many people and so much headcount. And that's at the expense of other things you could be doing that you need to add. So I'm just going to pause there. I think those were two big headlines, but we can dig deeply into the more of that conversation.
Yeah. The buzz after that was, I mean, people were, it was hilarious. Somebody had like, I don't know, halfway through raised their hand, for a question and then kind of lowered it. But Paul remembered and said, oh, you had a question, right? And the person just said, I did, but my brain is broken. So you should just move on. And I feel like that was like the theme of that session. People's brains were broken. Paul tends to do that if you give him any amount of time. And so it goes back to the first thing you said about like, how do we do more with less? How are we supposed to add more value when we're doing fewer things? I assume that was your implicit segue into AI.
Yes.
But I think like when you said that and when I thought about it, it reminded me, it's a far bigger scale, but remember when marketing automation became a thing and people thought marketing automation, great, that's going to be easy because they hear automation and they think, oh, then I just have to push a button and it does all the marketing for me. Maybe someday with AI it'll be that way. But I think the way to think about this is it's going to take a lot of work to be able to do less work. you're not going to be able to push a button. Like, it's just a lot of learning, a lot of keep up. You fall behind if you stop doing this stuff for a month. You've got to get everybody on board. You've got to learn how to use it. You keep iterating. At some point, it will bring less effort for the things you're doing, but you can't expect that off the bat. Just like you can't expect that with marketing automation, with CRM, with anything that requires a big investment in understanding and learning. So I just want to make that point so that people understand, like, you're going to have to really roll up your sleeves here. But you and I think agree wholeheartedly, this has got huge implications for marketing. And it's already happening. And 2025, I think we'll take those examples we hear about here and there and be like, ooh, did you hear about that one? And ooh, did you hear about that one? And they're going to become commonplace. You'd be like, yeah, no kidding. Like 20 people are doing that, or like everybody's doing something. So it was just phenomenal. At some point, Stephanie, I think you and I should do a point counterpoint on one topic that I keep hearing about. And I'd love to really dig into the idea that AI is not going to replace any humans, because it's just going to enable the people that are good at certain things to be better at those things. It's not going to replace them. I have a different perspective on that, but I know you have one, and I also know your perspective. I keep hearing about it. But I'd love to dig into it. Probably not today. No. Let's just mark that up. We'll make sure Mari marks that up for a like AI hot take deal. We'll have to really study up for that and bring the receipts before we dive into that.
I'm excited. That sounds really fun. Because that is what all the headlines are about right now, and they have been for a few months. I think that back to the point of, you know, brains being broken, it's almost like the more that you learn and swim in it, the more your brain breaks in a good way. So to your point that, like, this is not pushing a button, and for CMOs or marketing departments that are at square zero or even square one, it needs to be a key priority. It needs to be, you know, if your priorities are service line volume, brand building, AI should be right up there.
Right.
So
maybe number one.
Yeah.
Maybe number one. If we're going out of the gate in the first Monday of January saying, what should your top priority be as a CMO? I might make the case right now that it's AI, no matter what else you have going on. And I would also make the case, Stephanie, that you're not going to get there incrementally or organically. What I mean by that is you're not going to fit it in between other meetings and other responsibilities. You're going to have to find a way to rebuild the plane while you fly it. Sorry, cliche alert. Because that's what we're talking about here. It's like somebody who wants to get an MBA, and they want to get an MBA by just like, you know, I'm just going to take a class here and there, right? And you're going to take 5 years to get there because you don't want to do an MBA like a weekend thing, or you don't want to quit your job or whatever. You can get an MBA done in 5 years that way. You're screwed if you're going to do that with AI. You ain't got 5 years. You got 6 months or a year. And so you really are, it'd be like saying, I need to get an MBA by the end of this year. How would you do that? You're not doing that by saying, I can do an extra meeting, you know, a week, or I can fit it in here or there. You're going to have to really think differently to get up to speed and be able to really leverage us competitively.
Yeah.
And so how's that for a gauntlet thrown down?
I love it. Yes. I'm going to restate his quote of marketers who use AI will replace those who don't. So that's why this is, you know, maybe now it's becoming the top threat. I think when Rome is Burning first started, AI wasn't on the list, and then it got added to the list, and now it's made its way up to the top of the list, because for the CMOs that are ahead of the game and that are really deep in, I think, like, what they're doing well is they're using AI, generative AI, as part of their 24/7. Right? They are exploring, they are diving deeply into the tools, they're using it for everything they do personally and professionally, they're excited, they're jazzed, they're talking about it 24/7, they're encouraging their teams, they're saying, you have to use this, it's not a maybe, it's a must. That's, you know, that's what being a leader in this space looks like. It's not an experimentation like, yeah, I logged in one time, like, nah, you know. So I think that's to your point of the MBA analogy. But maybe with all of that, you know, maybe I would love to just highlight some of the practical takeaways that were shared in that session for those who are at square one, zero, two, three, wherever. So some of the recommendations were, first of all, start small, identify one or two high impact applications. So for example, I use the example of service line, you know, maybe web content. How could you think about using Gen AI to optimize that? Maybe there's a personalization pilot project you could do. Maybe there is, you know, the podcast editing. Those are some examples of things. Number two is focus on ROI. So Paul mentioned the importance of identifying what does success look like? What is your you know, ideal state? And that could be things like being able to do, you know, three more initiatives this year that you couldn't last year.
When you say ARI, you don't mean marketing ROI in terms of, you mean the ROI of implementing AI.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. What is your
ROI? AI ROI?
AI ROI. Oh, gosh.
ARI.
No. Alphabet soup.
AROI. AROI. Let's call it AROI. Yes.
No.
AROI.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the why? But behind, it's not just to increased your team's, you know, level up your team's knowledge. It is for a business purpose. And then the third recommendation he gave was making sure that you are doing all of this in an ethical way, because that is a whole can of worms in itself. And you got to think about HIPAA compliance. You have to think about, you know, what kind of data your teams are using, all of it. And that's where the brain starts breaking.
Yeah, it was a lot. A lot. And as we've said, I think you've probably said multiple times, I think we've said, we had Paul in, you ought to be listening to his podcast every week. It's entertaining. If you like AI, even if you don't, if you just want to be caught up, it's a great podcast. He has tons of content. So all the basics in AI. So it's a great place to start. Paul's a great guy. They've got a great team. So we would encourage you to at least start somewhere.
Okay. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground. I want to see, Chris, if there's any other, you know, key takeaways you had from Joe Public Retreat, anything that's you've continued to hear buzz about as you keep talking to, you know, folks who have attended, any other topics we haven't touched on?
Well, I think we want to get to Dr. Collins's conversation about brand, and maybe we can save that for the next episode, because I think we could go a little deeper into that one too. He's just another phenomenal presenter at the Joe Public Retreat. And again, if you've never been, these aren't keynote presentations. This is a fireside chat with Paul Raitzer, a fireside chat with Dr. Collins, where they get to pontificate and then you engage as an audience member with them directly. It's really a great opportunity. And Dr. Collins killed it as well. So I think we should spend some time on that next time. But the trick with, I've gotten a couple of people reach out to me after the Joe Public Retreat, and I haven't talked to them yet because it's been, you know, it came up like a week before the holidays.
You've been playing Rock Band.
I've been playing Rock Band. You can't interrupt that. You can't interrupt that. So yeah. But there will be, we're still trying to figure out what's next with Joe Public Retreat, when it'll be, that kind of stuff. So there'll be plenty more to talk about. But let's talk about Brand and Dr. Collins next time.
I would love to. That was so inspiring. And yes, we haven't had time to talk about it today, but it was really, really wonderful. And for anyone who doesn't know him, just check out a little bit around his book and his work around culture, because it's really transformative in how we think about brands and brand building.
I'll just give this plug. We're working with a number of we had clients that were at the Joe Public Retreat. And we work with any number of them on brand. And there's one of them right now that we're working with that we're building a brand idea that's very similar to what Dr. Collins was talking about. And he was so on point that we're now talking to Dr. Collins about coming in and speaking to the board about it. So I just think that shows culturally where things are at and the opportunities health systems have to do even more than they've thought. So we can dig into it more next time. That's a teaser.
Great. So from one topic, we've now two follow-up topics to dig into. So that's exciting. One topic begets many. All right. Well, we'll wrap it here. Thank you, Chris, for being here and for joining and rejoining the No Normal. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So glad to be back.
Yay. So for everyone listening, thank you for joining in and happy new year, because we're going to keep saying it. And we are going to be sharing a little bit more exclusive content from the Joe Public Retreat. So keep your eyes on our YouTube channel, which our handle is BPD Healthcare. There'll be some really fun things coming as we chatted with our attendees and got some even more insights that we've not shared at all yet. If you ever want us to cover something on the No Normal Show beyond the two additional topics we just talked about, shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare. And we love it when you share the show. Give us a review and ratings. And don't be satisfied with the normal. Push the no normal. As one of our attendees said, we want to burn Rome down with a slow and controlled burn. So I think that's what the no normal looks like, because when you do that, you can decide what comes, what is reborn, if you will.
It clears. That's right. It clears space for new things to grow. It's 1,000% right. Vic, we got to give Vic credit for that. We're not supposed to say who. I already asked him if we could quote him on that. So Vic Reese from UNC Health said, like, hey, sometimes fire's good. It's intentional. It clears out all the old stuff so new stuff can grow. So that is how to think about Rome is burning. Boom.
Yeah. It was such a mic drop moment. And that is what the no normal means. So with that, we will talk to you all next time.
All right. Bye.